You're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek Unlimited.
Hello and welcome to Altered Geek 163. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips, and joining me this week is...
Mike the Birdman Dodd from ThisWeekInGeek.net.
So, as we promised last week, this week we will be talking gaming. So, I guess we should go to the Nintendo Switch.
Ah, yes, the successor to the Wii U. I am indifferent on this, honestly. It's a new piece of Nintendo hardware, got announced a couple weeks ago. Supposed to be doing away with this whole dual screen thing. So it's the power of a real console, portable. I don't know how I feel about this. I'm not big on the controllers, that's for sure. Now, Nintendo has said they're not going to do any more announcements about this until January, but one of the presidents of Nintendo evidently didn't get that memo, and during an investor call this past week, released at least a little bit more info about the console, including cost. They say it's likely going to be comparable to what consumers are used to paying, so my guess is around $200 to $300.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, well, that's about what you paid for the Wii U. I mean, you got your basic Wii U for $200. Your Wii U Deluxe was $350, give or take. That's Canadian prices. So, now, another Nintendo insider has been leaking information where the Wii U is going to have 4 gigs of RAM, which is double what the Wii U has right now, I think, or something equivalent to that. And it's only going to have 32 gigs of internal storage, which is frigging terrible, considering that's what the Wii U has. I filled that thing up in less than a month.
Not hard to do.
Exactly. So, mind you, they are talking about high-capacity SD cards and cartridges, so I guess upgrading wouldn't be that big a deal, but if Nintendo's smart and they pull a Sony, which they will... They'll probably have a proprietary SD card, which would allow you to expand your memory, if I had to guess. They're also saying there's going to be no backwards compatibility with Wii U discs or 3DS cartridges, so I can't say I'm totally surprised there. That's not ruling out hardware, or sorry, software emulation. So, presumably, if you downloaded stuff on your Wii U, you should be able to download it here.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, we'll know more come January. Now, they're announcing this thing coming out in March. Rumor is it'll be out on the 17th in PAL territory, which means for us, it'll either launch on the 12th or the 19th. Because Nintendo likes to do launches on a Sunday, which is really weird. They do Saturday launches in Japan. So, I don't know. Launch lineup for games, they haven't really announced a whole lot beyond Zelda Breath of Life or Breath of the Wild or whatever the hell it's called. My guess is there'll be some kind of a Mario title just after E3, or at least for that summer. I don't know. I don't know whether I'm thrilled about this console, truth be told. I hate the way the controller looks. It looks uncomfortable. It looks awkward.
Yeah, I can definitely see that as well. That's not really something I'm looking forward to another Nintendo console. I'm not a huge fan of Nintendo as far as their modern consoles. Honestly, I would love to get my hands on an Xbox One. I just... obviously cannot afford it. I do like this Nintendo more than the Wii U, but I have no intention of picking this up either. I've kind of signed off on Nintendo after the Wii, which is rather unfortunate because I do enjoy what little I've played of the Wii U, like as far as like, I feel like I'm missing out on like the Mario and the Smash Brothers, but other than that, I don't feel like I'm missing anything.
Well, you've got a 3DS, so you have a Mario, or sorry, you've got Smash Brothers in your hand anyway.
True.
The thing is, I think with Nintendo, they're always about giving you a new gameplay experience, and the problem is I think the experience is getting in the way of giving you a solid gameplay. That's why third-party development was all but abandoned for the Wii U. I mean, someone did this today. In the 4 years the Wii U's been alive, there have been 70 million Wii U games sold, total. You know how many copies of Grand Theft Auto, it was 72 million copies of Wii U software. You know how many copies of Grand Theft Auto 5 have been sold in that time?
100 million?
70 million. That's one title. So the support's just not there. Now, first-party support for the Nintendo console, yeah, it's always been good. There aren't very many bad first-party Wii U games. I mean, I think the most recent Star Fox sucks, but that's more a control scheme choice. But that's the thing, though. Nintendo, when they jumped on the motion control train back in 2006 with the Wii, it was fun, it was innovative, but within 2 to 3 years, people are like, okay, can we stop the Wii waggle? And they kind of did for a while. And then when the Wii U came out, there was this whole focus on dual screen integration. And the only two games I ever saw do that proper was Splinter Cell Blacklist, which was a launch title, and Zombie U, which was another Ubisoft title, because you had to use the thing to scan the environment and wave this thing around. That's the only two games I can think of. Well, maybe Mass Effect 3 had a map and you could map your biotic powers to it. Other than that, though, they're just, Nintendo wanted to give you something cool. They wanted to give you an experience, but they never gave me a memorable game. Now, that's not to say that the Mario titles have been bad. Mario Kart Wii U was friggin' great. But there hasn't been anything outside of Smash Brothers that's really blown up my skirt. Like, where is my Pokemon standalone game for the Wii? For the Wii U? Sure, we got the Pokken Fighting Tournament, which is a whole new level of ridiculous, but I guess the fact that it exists proves that it sells. So, I don't know. I mean, I want Nintendo to do something drastically different, but I don't want it to not be like Nintendo. I mean, if I want a console, yeah, I can pick up an Xbox or a PS4, which I still don't get how you people, the prices come down on those consoles so much, or you should be able to afford one by now, considering they're 3 years into each other's lifespan now, which is insane to think about.
I still cannot afford Battlefield 1, which has just come out.
If I could help you, man, I truly would.
I know.
Because I'm actually just literally waiting right now on a code for Call of Duty. Like, as we record this show, I'm just waiting for my PR person just to send it to me. So,
I wish that I could get one of those from EA, but I've heard that that's impossible.
See, the only EA contact I used to get a lot of, actually, if it's anything Mass Effect, they'll throw it my way, no problem. Anything else, it's like pulling teeth. Hell, I didn't even get Titanfall this year. I actually had to go out and buy that, which is the best game no one's playing right now.
And I wonder why. Like, they, I heard that monetarily it's bombed.
Well, their analysts are predicting it's going to sell under the 9 million units. They're going to predict closer to 5 or 6. It's because EA's marketing sucked for it. They put no money into it. They're sandwiching Titanfall 2 between Battlefield 1 and Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, which launches tonight. So, you've kind of shot yourself in the foot, and it's because EA doesn't necessarily own the IP that they feel like they don't have to. They're just publishing it. I mean, that's Respawn who developed it, and it's releasing across Xbox, PlayStation 4, and PC, as opposed to last time where it was Xbox and PC only. So I hope it's got the oomph to survive. I'm going through the campaign now. I played a lot of the multiplayer. I mean, I was really good at that when I used to play back in the day. So, but to swing things back to Nintendo, third-party support's going to really determine where this system goes, I think. During the announcement video, they did show NBA 2K17 being shown off. They showed off Skyrim Special Edition, although even Bethesda has said they have nothing to announce at this time for it, so I don't know. And the fact that we're getting excited about a 5-year-old game getting ported to a modern console kind of says something. Now, that being said, I'm a huge Skyrim mark. Like, I'm actually playing it right now, literally, as we're talking. So I'm still excited for the remaster, but unless Nintendo gets some really cool third-party exclusives or gets that one killer app, because for the Wii U, in terms of titles you must own, every single one was a Nintendo only. There was no third-party app that you could only get there. I mean, oh, I guess Bayonetta, but I guess I want to say Bayonetta 2 was released on other consoles. I don't know. I didn't play it. I've got it, but I didn't play it. And, like, there needs to be that mover and shaker that is not a Zelda, that is not a Mario. Now, if you introduce the new Metroid on that console, maybe. Maybe go back to Form New Castlevania. Or maybe, here's something that I think Nintendo really needs to take a look at. It's how they do video game streaming. PlayStation Now, has a subscription service where you can stream PlayStation 3 games to a PlayStation 4 because the system in and of itself is not backwards compatible, which is stupid. Whereas Xbox One is backwards compatible with a huge library of games and it's growing every single month. And they've promised that going forward with like Project Scorpio. I think if Nintendo were to offer, okay guys, we're going to offer you an Xbox Live like service. It's going to cost you X amount of dollars per year. But if you want to pay more, and here, you can stream the entirety of the NES library, the Super Nintendo library, N64, GameCube, or whatever, that would move consoles. If you gave me the ability to say, hey, I can go back and play Chrono Trigger, or I can go back and play Blast Corps, I can go back and play Super Mario Sunshine on a modern console and stream it, or have a much better virtual console experience, that is a system seller to me. Like, Nintendo's virtual console has always sat on the cusp of being great, but it always sits at just above mediocre. I mean, the console's life cycle is coming to an end, or production is officially ending very, very soon. And it's only like last year, or within the last year and a half anyway, that we just got Earthbound ported. You're telling me you couldn't have gone the Square or whoever and ported Super Mario RPG, Chrono Trigger, Secret of Mana, Breath of Fire. You couldn't have ported all these great RPGs on the Wii U a year ago or at launch. You're telling me you couldn't have done that? Like, you could sell a Nintendo console on nostalgia alone. Hell, they're doing that this month with the NES Classic.
I know, which is a great idea.
Great idea, but it's basically a collection. It's basically the NES games you got when you got your 3DS Ambassador program. stuff from years back in 2012, I want to say 2011, on a little NES Mini, which is HDMI compatible, which is cool in and of itself, but the fact that there's no external storage, that's it, one and done. Now, if they did that for the N64 or the Super Nintendo, I'd be very curious to see what they could pull off, or especially with these proprietary SD cards. If you could print, if you could 3D print or whatever, a little mini GameCube that's super powerful and is no bigger than, like, I don't know, a pill bottle, that would sell. That would sell tremendously well, considering how much computing power we can squeeze into, like, the Raspberry Pi and other similar devices. There's no reason why we couldn't have a super powerful portable console like that. But I digress. I think Nintendo's got its work cut out for it. I really do. But I want this console to be successful. I just think Microsoft and Sony have a much stronger stranglehold. Nintendo is exclusively going to be that family console, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you're not going to be able to compete with Modern Warfare or whatever with a Mario game, but a Mario game has a much broader appeal. You're more likely to find it in more homes. So, but the install base will always be small compared to the other consoles because they can do more. But with third-party support this time, maybe Nintendo has a chance to change the game. But it's this weird gimmick thing where you can take the Switch with you. And I want to know, how much battery power does this thing have? I'm hearing rumors of 3 hours.
That's horrible.
Yeah, that's like, sorry, pardon my language, but man, my fucking PSP had better like battery power than that. And that thing sucked. So I've got questions, so to speak. So, I don't know. There's just so many questions that I want to have answered. Don't know whether I'm going to have answered at any visible point in the future. But, I don't know, Steve. You're a family man. What do you want out of Nintendo console?
Cheap price and controllers that make sense, and the ability to not only buy the games that come with Nintendo's generally, but the other software that's on, like, the Xbox or the PlayStation. So I don't have to buy a third console or buy it for another machine.
Now, there is...
And then have maybe the specs of one of the more powered machines rather than the disasters that we get stuck with that are Nintendo's outdated pieces of machinery.
Now, there's something that was brought up that I thought was actually interesting. And maybe Nintendo has an advantage here. If Nintendo truly gives you the power of a portable console that you can bring with you, maybe I don't need to be lugging around the Xbox or the PlayStation. And that's something a lot of people are not talking about. If this thing is up to spec with modern consoles, and I think it is, it's still underpowered compared to what Project Scorpio and PlayStation Pro are going to be, but that's just the way it is. So, yeah, I mean, with you and your family, I see problems with this thing. Just because I can only imagine how many of these Wii Switch or these Nintendo Switches are going to get smashed. Just because the entire console is literally in your hand. And kids are clumsy. Kids make mistakes.
Yeah, see, my kids like to mess with my Nintendo Wii and knock it over, so I actually have to leave it unplugged. And then my Xbox, if I don't unplug that when I'm done playing it, my kid likes to press the power button, so it goes over and over, so I literally cannot leave my devices plugged in. to which I could see if I had one of the Nintendo Switches, my kid pressing the power button and shutting off the game mid-game.
That I walk into the living room and it's just randomly on. And I'll be just like, get download. Still not playing it today.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, I remember playing my Wii a lot during college. I don't know. There's a very big disconnect with the Wii U, and I think a lot of its older players, I mean, outside of, like, say, Mario Maker, hell, even the Amiibo craze seems to have finally dropped off or evened out. You don't see people killing each other over a Lucario anymore, or killing each other over Marth or Ike. Still regret the fact that I sold most of my collections, because I had almost every single one. But hey, I got a new bed out of the deal, so I really can't complain.
Nice.
Yeah, that's how much those suckers were worth. That's nuts. But I don't know. With the Switch, I'm very curious how its online services are going to work, how our Nintendo accounts are going to be integrated. Are we going to be able to download software we already own? What are the expansions going to be like for it? Basically, what are my software choice, or not software? What are my storage choices? Like right now, my Wii U is hooked up to a 2 terabyte hard drive, to which maybe I've used maybe 100 gigs, maybe, because I store a lot of my stuff digital, and that's not including the SD card I got plugged into the front, which came from my original Wii, that has all my classic console stuff. So I've got questions about that. Extra controllers, pro controller. And this is something I always found really weird during the marketing for those things. They're trying to tell me Splatoon's going to be an e-sport. No.
Right.
Categorically, no. It hurts the brain to think. But if you look at just how e-sports is structured and Splatoon, you realize this is not going to work. But that's another thing, too. How does Nintendo compete with the super hardcore stuff like that? I mean, Nintendo's support of esports events has always been kind of iffy. Like, they got pissy about Smash Brothers a couple years ago and tried to get it pulled from Evo, if I remember correctly.
They're trying to get stuff pulled from YouTube.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I mean, like, trying to make any money off any Nintendo creations. I don't see a lot of people talking about Mario Maker anymore. And that was a huge thing, and that was a great idea. Hell, Mario Maker should have been a teaching tool, like, in school. Like, teach spatial awareness, design, stuff like that. Like, my wife was talking about how she could use Mario Maker to integrate into lesson plans. She was even talking about integrating stuff like Minecraft, because kids understand that. Kids are attracted to that sort of idea, but obviously it never happened. I don't know. I want to be optimistic. I do. I don't want to be this old fogey like, say, Michael Pachter, or I don't want to be overly optimistic, like Jeff kind of Keely sort of thing. But I don't know. I don't think I'm being given nearly enough information to be super like, oh my god! But at the same time, maybe Nintendo's dripping this information out to us just a little too slow. The fact that we're less than 6 months out from launch, that we're just getting information now. We knew everything about the Xbox One. I felt like a year in advance, at least. And the best
easily.
And Nintendo didn't show anything off at E3 outside of Breath of the Wild, which is, I guess, okay. And just their announcement, even for the Switch, was kind of lame, too. Like, this is something that should have been shown off at Tokyo Game Show or Gamescom or something. And almost every leak has been pretty much consistently right on the money for this thing, too. So, I'm waiting for that wow factor. For me, even with the Wii U, the wow factor for me was that first Mario game and Zombie U. There were games I was looking forward to. The new Zelda, you can paint me as a bastard here, but I don't care. I haven't cared for a Zelda game since A Link to the Past. I don't like Ocarina of Time. I don't like Majora's Mask. Now, what was that? I think it was called A Link Between Worlds. It was pretty cool. And I even really liked Wind Waker. But that's a franchise that hasn't blown up my skirt in quite some time either. I don't know. I want something. I want a wow factor. I want a new Metroid in today's graphics to kind of wash away the horrible taste that was Metroid Other M. I just got a new Star Fox, so that ain't gonna happen. But give me a wow factor, Nintendo. I know you can do this. And don't let it be something cute and cuddly. I don't need another Donkey Kong. Even show me more of Zelda. Maybe get me excited about that somehow. But from what I've seen, I'm thinking, okay, this girl at some point. Which I think that would have been a rather bold choice. I think that would have been actually kind of cool. Would have been almost calling back to the CDI days, which is a bad thing. Hell, you know what would be great for a laugh? If Nintendo could somehow find a way to port those games over. They're terrible. My God, they're terrible. But I'd pay $10 for them. I love bombing the Dongos. I think it'd be fucking great. But as I've said many times, I want my wow factor, and I want my wow factor now.
So with that, we will move on to something else right after this.
Welcome to the Wicked Radio Network.
Want to interact with the show? You can contact us in the following ways. You can call the voicemail line 502-526-5821. You can email us feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can visit the episode post on geekcastradio.com or alteredgeek.com. You can get all of us on Twitter @alteredgeek. Look for us every week on geekcastradio.com, of course, Stitcher Smart Radio, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and AlteredGeek.com. And now, back to the show.
And we're back. So, I'm going to start off with the Battlefield 1 bad PR practices before you get into your Bethesda PR practices.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with what happened tail end of October, but they put there was a couple of Battlefield 1 memes that they kind of put out on their Twitter page, and unfortunately they were in very poor taste, because it says, even on this article on Polygon, says, maybe don't put a hashtag on World War One. And they had weekend goals, just World War One things, and then it shows, like, one of the flamethrower troopers, and it says, when you're too hot for the club, and he's, like, burning people alive in the game. And then there's another one where it says, when your squad is looking good, looking on point as you're, like, stabbing someone.
Yeah. I can see where they're coming from, but...
And then, like, basking in the glow of a burning airship, and you see the Zeppelin crashing down and stuff like that. So, I could definitely see that.
I could see that, but at the same time, I think back to, okay, where do you draw the line in terms of taste, good taste, and it just being, it's a marketing thing, get over it?
Well, in this instance, I kind of agree that it's poor taste because the game is kind of based on a true event.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I feel like it's impactful I can see where people actually legitimately could get offended by it.
Okay. A lot.
But if it were not based on a real event, then I would tell people to get their heads out of their rears.
Well, Call of Duty Black Ops, Vietnam happened. Call of Duty World War, the Korean War, not the Korean War, Japanese front happened. Call of Duty 1 through 3, those all happened. Where do you draw the line?
I personally draw the line on if it's a real event or not.
Well, Japan happened.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, like, if it's based on a real world type war, like Korean War, you know, the World War One, and they're trying to turn it into a hashtag meme type thing.
Yeah, but then again,
that's the only time I see something wrong with it. But like, if it's, you know, just a generic, you know, shooter game, and they're like, you know, weekend goals, and then they're doing, you know, so if this had happened to be, you know, like Battlefield 4.
Yeah, because
I don't see the issue with it, but I could see where, because people legitimately, like, a big chunk of the world paid for this war in blood, so I can kind of see where people get offended by this particular instance.
Yeah, I mean,
now, do they need to go as far as being like, oh, I hate EA because they did this, or, you know, screw Battlefield because they did this stupid meme? No, I think it was just, you know, somebody didn't really think it through all the way. I think that they should be, like, flambasted for it? Probably not. But, you know, it was posted in poor taste.
I don't know. Is that I'm of the mindset you've got to market it somehow. And at the same time, if you were to reverse those roles, if this game came out in, say, Germany, and it was them killing the Allies, we'd be pissed off, too.
True.
There is no winning this one. There is no good guy, truthfully. So I think this is the case of, guys, it's a video game, chill out. Yes, a lot of people died, but we've made movies and shooters about World War II for 15, 20 years. I mean, out of the images you've described, I'd say maybe the Zeppelin one is probably the least offensive.
Yeah.
Because at least it's iconic, it's spectacle, as opposed to a guy walking through a trench with a flamethrower.
Yeah, and you actually see the guy, like, it's a GIF, so it's actually the guy, like, burning somebody.
Yeah, see, that's with the thing, you're seeing a piece of equipment, you're not equating humanity with it, so to speak. Or if you had a guy standing on a piece of artillery as it was firing, then you could make a thing, or maybe show a guy sharpening a bayonet. That's a little better, sort of thing. But because they're adding the human element to it, I can see where they are coming from. But at the same time, well, do you want to sell a copy of the game or not? So there is no winners, unfortunately, only losers. And that's us.
Yep. So moving on.
So you were mentioning Bethesda in its review policies. This is something that came out a couple weeks ago, or about a week ago, rather, with Skyrim Special Edition, and even further back with Doom, which came out in May of this year. Bethesda now is of the mindset where they will no longer be sending review copies to journalists ahead of the release date, except for one day. But they will send them to YouTubers and other enthusiast press to kind of get the word out on their game. For example, Skyrim Special Edition was sent out to modders in the community very early on, so the mods would be ready for Xbox One and PS4 when the game launched on October 28th. Which, review embargoes and review policies are, I'm no stranger I'm no stranger to them, but the fact that now they're not being allowed more ahead of time kind of takes away from consumers to have an informed decision. One of the worst PR things I ever encountered was for Assassin's Creed Unity. And that game we know is buggy to shit. Its review policy was you could not have a published review out until after the game had launched later on that day. So pre-orders were already fulfilled, copies were already out. So I did find that a little bit shady. So with Bethesda kind of doing this, another guy on YouTube, and a guy known as JV217 or 27 or something like that, made some very good points. Is this anti-consumer? And I'm kind of starting to wonder, because necessarily they don't need us as the media. They don't need people like me who work with traditional broadcast, television, radio, and print to tell them if a game's good or not. Now, if a game is tremendous, if it does really, really, really well, like Doom did this year, they don't need us. But not sending out a game like Skyrim, which has hundreds of hours of content, but Bethesda games are known to be buggy. Hell, I don't even think I got Fallout 4 until the day before release, or the day of release. Although, when I think back to 2011, when Skyrim originally came out, I had that game 2 or 3 weeks in advance. And yet now the tune has changed. So, I don't know, what are your thoughts on it? Like, do you think media should have advanced copies to inform the public? Or is it only encouraging people to get that fast initial review out to get the clicks? And it may not necessarily be the most well-informed.
I think this is really kind of a weird slippery slope, only because I think people put more stock in the YouTubers and the Twitch players than they do the media reviewers, because I think that there's been this general consensus, especially with like just mainstream media, not necessarily like journalists like yourself, or like reviewers like either one of us, or I think there's this general consensus that if you're a part of or promoting for an organization other than yourself, that you may not be as legitimate as if you were playing it because you were given a copy of it and you're playing it and you're showing it off and your audience is watching it with you. And so I think that may be why they may be moving to that direction, because it seems like Twitch and YouTube gamers seem to get like top tier on like all the new like gaming technology, the gaming gear, the gaming you know, the new games, like any of the equipment that's needed, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. I think there's a certain advantage to having the YouTuber influencer as a person you can work with. I also think it's a very positive thing to have, have the Twitch streamer involved, but without legitimate media giving their critique on stuff, I can see only giving it to enthusiasts and people you know that are going to love it, early access. You're not painting a proper picture of what the final product is. And I think that hurts the consumer because you're only getting one side of the story. Now, people like me, we are trained to look for problems. We're trained to look for mistakes. But at the end of the day, these businesses, they're businesses. They're there to make money. Bethesda knows this. If they can somehow get around this, then it's not like I can blame them, because that is pretty smart. So Some people are going to catch on. Some people won't. So.
But I think anymore, that this is going to be the trend, though, is that they're going to get these streamers to do it. Like, I mean, I stream Battlefield 4 and Battlefield 1 from time to time. And mind you, when I was doing Battlefield 1, it was during the alpha, during the beta. During the trial period before the game actually released. And it was, you know, one, it was because, you know, I figured people would like to see the gameplay and like to see, you know, my thoughts or the bugs with it. Because I wasn't just saying, oh, I love this game immensely. It's like the best thing I've ever played. While I, you know, was saying a lot of that, I was also pointing out anytime I saw a flaw. And I was also just playing the game to play the game because I genuinely enjoyed it. Because, like, I won't play a game beyond, like, 10 hours if it's something that doesn't interest me in the slightest. I can see where they would curb this, like, especially if the company has, like, a track record of having, like, some really crappy games from time to time. Because then they could give it to the people they know that are diehards for their company. And then get away from the bad PR, at least at first, so they can sell a crap load of copies.
Yeah. Now, it does kind of say something, because, like, there are certain titles that I'm enthusiastic about, and I'd probably give a pass to no matter what. Like, if someone said, hey, Mike, we're going to throw you Mass Effect early. Okay, done. I mean, short of it being another Vampire Rain or something, I'm probably going to give it a raving review. But I'd rather have someone be honest with me, someone who's going to save me $60, especially considering the price of games is always going up in seasons past, is basically tacking another price of a game on top of a game that you already own. I don't know, like, they're doing something smart. It's sneaky, but it's smart. I sadly think this is the way the trend is going to go. You're going to see more YouTubers become more prominent than actual journalists. I can't even name very many tech journalists anymore. The most I can think of, Mark Saltzman up here in Canada. You don't see him do a whole lot of gaming stuff. I can think of Victor Lucas. He's always done stuff with the Electric Playground. Jeff Keighley with his new YouTube show. And as much as I like Jeff, you know there's corporate money backing that show.
I think people are more going towards the separate person, the person that's not tied to a media conglomerate. I think people are wanting that genuine, you know, video view of, you know, people actually talking about the product, you know, whether it's good or bad. I mean, because you kind of know when you're watching, especially a YouTuber, which way they're going to lean if you've been watching their stuff for a while. So you kind of know what road they're going to be taking.
Yeah.
And in doing that, you know whether they're going to be biased or not, for the most part. Like, I watch, and the truth is YouTube is pretty much where the future of everything's at. They, you know, podcasting, yes, it is huge, but that's more so when you're in your car. Predominantly, especially mobily, people more so prefer YouTube. And so if you've got all these, like, between the YouTube gaming and the Twitch, and you can watch this stuff mobile on your phone or on your PC or, you know, on your streaming devices of any kind, whether it's a, you know, Blu-ray player or, you know, set-top box. But a lot of this stuff, like, people are watching YouTubers more for their reviews and for the content and for the streaming of games and for, you know, just stuff in general, to the point that they're almost pushing out people that did it professionally and have, you know, been trained in it, and you're getting all these people that are kind of just figuring it out as they go, kind of taking up as the new guard, even though they probably shouldn't have been invested in that heavily. but they've become like the new age, like fully accessible reviewer celebrities. So people are like, you know, infatuated with what they think.
Yeah, because like one of the YouTubers I watch all the time, and not just because he's my friend, is Angry Joe. You know which way he's gonna slant 9 times out of 10. But you're kind of okay with it, because if he comes across as one of the few people on YouTube, I believe is very, very, very passionate about what he does. I genuinely believe his reviews 9 times out of 10. I do see him fairly free of corporate influence, as he makes his fun of characters on his show called Corporate Commander and stuff like that, which is pretty funny. And I know personally, companies have shied away from people like him because they know they're not going to toe the line of bullshit, because there are people who will get more reviews or copies or stuff sent their way if they're... Being paid isn't the right thing, but if a company pays you or offers to take you somewhere and you do a review event, you're more likely to get invited back if you give the game a positive spin.
So you mean like when, for instance, EA flew everybody out for Battlefield 1?
Exactly. They're more like, they're going to choose people that are influencers, and they're going to choose the right people they think can get more people to buy the game. They want people they know they got a good relationship with. And that's not necessarily a bad thing in some sense. But you as the journalist have to keep your sources happy. And I'm not saying you sell out. No. I always think of this. There's a great line in The Simpsons. It's the one where Homer gets the monorail for Springfield. And that salesman guy says, "There's the truth." And the truth. And that's an important distinction to remember in media. There's the truth and the truth. And sometimes you toe the truth line a little more than you should sometimes, but you're serving the greater good down the line because you want to have access to these stories. If you piss off enough people, you're going to get blackballed. And it's such a hard line to walk between being ethical and being honest. That's where I guess you could bring up the whole Gamergate thing, but we are so not touching that.
Nope.
Not a chance in hell about ethics and game journalism. It comes down to how you want to present things. And I'm glad a lot of companies and people have now moved into their reviews saying, "I have been provided a review copy of this by the company."
Yeah, and I think transparency is key in today's world. To let people know where you stand and whether, you know, like, hey, I got this for free. It's definitely a review of, you know, been sponsored by this company, but it will in no, you know, way affect my judgment on it, you know. And
yeah, like one YouTuber, I love how they approach it. It's a YouTuber called Drifter. At the beginning of his videos, he tells you outright, this video has been sponsored. And then he goes into whatever he has to talk about. Myself, I don't often give disclaimers because I've always made it apparent I get most of my stuff for free. It's very rarely that I buy anything. But I've also told people, it's open. I like to think it's in my personality. If this game sucks, I will tell you. Or if I don't say anything about it, that's a pretty good indicator of why you should probably not be paying attention to it, so to speak. And I don't think that's a bad line to have either. In my very early days as a journalist, there was one game I was asked to cover. And I said, okay. I played this game. I played this game for a couple of hours. I then took the game's peripheral outside and smashed it with a hammer. I then called the peripheral developer and said, hey, would you be offended if I were to set this thing on fire and pee on it? Because I kind of want to make a YouTube video, and I think that'd be kind of funny. They weren't pleased with that answer. But they understood. I felt very passionate about it. They're like, okay, we understand you didn't like it. Can you say that in a more socially acceptable way? I'm like, absolutely. I can do that for you. You can be truthful without being an asshole. You can be honest without being mean-spirited. And I think that's where a lot of people get kind of lost in the shuffle. But I swing it back to my original point with the whole YouTubers and other media and people getting stuff early. I think as long as the right people are getting the copies early and they're honest, I guess that's just the way it's going to have to go. There are some people on YouTube I genuinely trust, and they're going to get their stuff early, and that's fine. There are some other people on YouTube I know they virtually ride game companies' fees, and that's the way it is. There's always going to be people that buy in and sell out, and that's just the way it is. That is media. That is buying and selling influence. That is peddling views. And unfortunately, it's up to you as the consumer to figure out what's what, and it's going to be a little bit harder these days. But I like to believe in the collective non-stupidity of people that are out there. Don't let me down. That you'll make the right informed choice when the time comes.
Mm-hmm.
So, hopefully I've made that crystal clear. I mean, I don't know. How do you see my approach to it?
No, I mean, I kind of agree with you on everything that you've just mentioned. I mean, it's not... I don't see an issue with getting stuff for free and reviewing it and being honest about it without, you know, having that dickish side to it. Because, like, I mean, I got, you know, I mean, I wouldn't consider it a review copy getting, you know, Battlefield 1 Alpha. I just was one of the select few that got chosen to play it. I have no idea how I got into that role of being chosen. But I was like one of four guys out of our like 60 person clan that got chosen for our group. And I got to play the Alpha, and I, even in my streams, noticed glitches with it and unfortunately didn't get to record them because it would have been hilarious. But like I was in one tank and I shot at another tank, and the tank, I actually meant to shoot at the guy next to the tank, and it bounced off the guy, hit the tank, and the tank went flying across the map. And I was like, well, that's not supposed to happen. And so, you know what I mean? I had aspects like that, that kept happening throughout the game in the Alpha, and then they corrected a lot of that in the beta, but the beta still had its issues as well, but they were a lot less than the Alpha. And then getting into the main game, a lot of it's been fixed, but there's still some things that I noticed from the Alpha and the beta that have not yet been fixed, and they seem to be like patching as they go, but it's still... Yeah, I mean, I had no problem telling my issues with what it was, and I still enjoyed the game overall, and I enjoyed everything about it. And yes, I was a little biased because of my like of Battlefield 4, which I also mentioned. But, like, you know, I mean, I think as long as you've got full transparency on, like, yeah, I have a little bit of a bias here, but I also enjoyed the game, and yes, there are these problems with it. You know, I think that you're kind of safe. So, switching gears a little bit, have you heard of the thing called Gamers Vote?
No, what is it?
It's for the United States, mostly because it's about getting people to go out and vote for the presidential election.
Yeah.
Which I will touch briefly. Because by next recording, we will have our new president of the United States, whomever it may be. Basically what this thing is, and I signed up for it at some point, don't know when, must have been last year, but it's the Video Game Voters Network, kind of sponsored by E3, in a sense. Yeah. Pretty much what they're doing is they're saying that gamers basically have the power to change our nation with the ability to vote. And the fact that politicians are constantly trying to take away our First Amendment rights and abilities to have, you know, our games the way we have them, or, you know, it's basically the amount of people that game would have the power to change, you know, the United States anyway. So it's basically a thing to get people to go out and vote. And in doing so, you get, you sign this pledge on Facebook of, yeah, I'm going to the polls on the 8th. And they send you a Gamer's Vote sticker, kind of like the I Voted sticker. And you take a picture of yourself and you tag yourself to their hashtag in their Twitter account or their Facebook account, and then they put you in a drawing to win two tickets to E3. So, I did that.
That's pretty clever. I
mean, so,
people go out there and vote whether you vote Republican, Democrat, or third party. I mean, I guess as long as you're a part of the democratic process, that's what really matters.
And that's what they're basically saying, is that people should just vote. It, you know, you pick, you know, do your due diligence, figure out who you align with closer in policy or whatever, and then just go out and just make a difference by using your right to vote, which is about the only right you really have besides taxes and dying.
It's kind of funny, but it's all going to be over next Tuesday.
And I can't wait, because I'm so tired of all of the bullcrap on social media about this. And then you get the people that are so ignorant, and it's on both sides of the map. Doesn't matter whether you're Republican, Democrat. There's so many ignorant people on both sides of that make the other side look horrible when neither candidate is fit to lead.
Yeah.
So,
I've seen some pretty ignorant statements come from both sides, but I've made it no secret that I would go Democrat because I'm very liberal in my thinking.
I'm conservative in my thinking. I'm normally Republican, but like, his problem is he says things that people think, but he has no tact or filter.
I think the Republican Party, and this is how I see it, after this election, there's going to be a big change.
Which there should be. And I think that's, you know, kudos to Trump in that instance, that he's shaken up the process, because it's gotten so stagnant over the last 60 years that we're getting the same crap over and over and over and over. Instead of having legitimate third parties jumping into this election, we're just having the same two just beating each other with a shovel every year.
See, that's what I don't understand. You people can have 12 different Coke flavors, but can only have two parties. In Canada, we have like five.
We have five parties. Just the other ones that aren't Republican or Democrat are not allowed to take part in the rest of the election process or the debates at the same time.
I mean, up here in Canada, we have the Liberals, the Progressive Conservatives, the New Democratic Party, and the Bloc Québécois and the Green Party. And each of them has representation in government in some form. Like, we have the official opposition and whatnot. But to not drag on politics too far, because we'll piss someone off inevitably.
Well, and I understand that, and I I had fun watching, like, there's the college kids say the darndest things on YouTube.
I'm just, part of me sad that it's going to be over on Tuesday, because I'll tell you, this has been an amazing 16 months of watching your country implode. But at the same time, Tuesday night, when the final vote is counted, one way or another, we're witnessing history. You're either going to watch the first woman president, the first mom, voted into the highest place in the land, or, I'm sorry, I really want to say it, but I don't want to piss someone off.
Yeah, just say you're Canadian, you get a pass.
Okay, so, or you voted fuckface Von Clownstick into office, or the talking pumpkin, or...
I thought you were going to say the annoying orange.
I mean, regardless, though. Regardless what happens on Tuesday, history's going to be made. History will look back on this point in your country's past, and I don't know how they're going to judge us. I just hope that on Tuesday, America makes the right decision for itself, because the rest of us are going to be affected too. So, I wish everyone in the United States the best of luck on Tuesday. Vote early. Don't vote often. Don't be an asshole. But just do the right thing. Do what you think is right. I mean, Republican or Democrat or whatever, as long as you do what you believe in, I cannot fault you for it.
Well, and the other thing is, too, if it does end up with Trump as president, you guys get Bryan Cranston. I don't know if you saw that article. He said if Trump gets elected, he's moving to Canada. Bryan Cranston.
Man, that'd be... I want to live next door to Heisenberg.
He's Zordon now.
Oh, man, I want to live next door to Zordon. Yeah.
But I think to get it on a happy note before we close it out, on the final thing, because I've enjoyed this immensely and watched it like about 24 times. Have you watched the Tom Hanks episode on SNL?
I have not.
There's an awesome clip on there called David Pumpkins. And it's basically this couple goes in they go in this, like, basically Tower of Terror type thing, except it's still an elevator, but it's 100 floors of terror. And I won't ruin the skit for anybody, but this thing is hilarious, and it would not work without Tom Hanks playing this character. And it's just they've been trying to do this for years with different skits, but I think they finally captured it here. And it's funny enough that after the skit aired, people were buying the domains for this of like davidpumpkins.com or davidspumpkins.com. And I bought imdavidpumpkins.com and have it linked to my YouTube channel because it's funny to me. It was probably one of the best like Halloween skits in recent years that they've done, and it's just because Tom Hanks was in it and he made it work. But
I don't know why. I'm not even precisely sure why I'm bringing this up. I really thought you were going to ask me if I'd seen that pineapple pens thing. I don't know why.
No.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, don't look it up. Stop now while you still can.
I'm not looking it up.
Someone's Googling it right now.
But I guess this clip is supposed to be confusing. It says it works because it leaves you confused. Because you're sort of like, wait, what? You know, trying to figure it out. And it's just... It's spectacular. And they tried to do something similar with it a few years ago. They did like this FBI simulator last year. and it didn't quite work, or the year before last, and they did the Close Encounter clip like last year, and none of them really have hit the mark that this particular clip has done. So yeah, definitely watch this. It's funny. You won't regret it. And if you do, just send hate mail, you know, steve@geekcastradio.com.
Speaking of mail, we should talk about the comment we got last week about what should be on television.
Yeah, we should.
Your listener, to kind of just kind of sum it up, because I'm just going to do it from memory, was suggesting that Dune should be a TV series, and I completely agree.
I agree. I've seen the film. I think wasn't Patrick Stewart in it and Sting and.
Yeah, it's weird. That's a good way to put it.
I've seen it. It's been a long time, but I've seen it. But I do kind of agree that Dune would make an awesome television series because they would actually get time to flesh it out.
Oh yeah, if you put that on HBO, gave it 5 seasons, if you gave it the like Game of Thrones treatment, it'd be awesome.
And then Jedi Disaster also said, with all the comic book shows on TV, I would love to see some TV shows like TV movie stories as well, like CW doing like an Infinity Crisis. You know, he says, because they basically have all the pieces there to do it. It would just be them doing it.
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea to adapt smaller stories or at least bigger storylines. I'd love to see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. do a TV movie. Maybe if you could get Jeremy Renner for a couple of weeks and just shoot a Hawkeye TV movie with Coulson, I think that'd be awesome.
But they're going out of their way to make sure Coulson stays dead in the movie universe.
Yep, yep, they are. But
The only thing that they've got going for them on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is they have two Ghost Riders.
Yes, they finally introduced Johnny Blaze.
I just hope that it's Nicolas Cage.
Although there's rumors, they're talking about after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., once they do their stint with Ghost Rider, he could very easily cross over into the Netflix universe. So,
and they need to get Nicolas Cage.
I'd be okay if he made a cameo as Johnny Blaze. I'd be okay with that.
Well, I'm saying if they make Johnny Blaze, I think they'd make him a cameo. I don't think they'd actually make a series with him being the lead because they want the younger guy to be in there.
You know who would easily do a cameo? You just have to, I guess, get the money together. I want Blade on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for at least one episode. Just give me Blade.
I think Wesley Snipes still wants to play him.
He does. So as long as the MCU people can figure out a way to make this happen, I'm totally game for it. I think that'd be awesome.
I think you'd be more apt to see it on Netflix than you would on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, for sure.
But then again, we got Ghost Rider on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I didn't see that coming either.
Yeah, so who knows, man. Finally, things are starting to fire up right on point again with that show. I still got to catch up on the last half of last season, but I keep enough of an ear to the ground that I know kind of what's going on. Looking forward to seeing Doctor Strange and seeing how it ties into. Hopefully, I won't get a chance to see that for a few weeks by the sounds of it. So,
but the other nice thing about speaking of shows that are getting better, Arrow has drastically improved this season. It's very much close to its season 1 and 2 counterpart rather than the 3 and 4.
It's a show that never caught on with me. I'm more interested in getting into Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow.
Well, you're going to kind of have to know a little bit about all of them because there's going to be a 5-episode crossover between the 4 shows.
That'll be exciting to see, actually. I just wish they'd bring Constantine back. But hey, he's alive in their universes, so I'm good enough with that.
Yeah, they introduced him. He's still there. So, and I know that this 5-parter has to do with like Barry Allen and Eobard Thawne. So,
should be exciting, and it should be good.
Yep.
So I guess with that in mind, what have we got coming up on the network this week?
Nothing really this week. Next week we have, basically the same thing. We have the Top 100 first episodes dropping on next Thursday, which is the Top 100 Animated Characters. It is...
I have to apologize to Kevin that I didn't get that done. Kevin, I'm so, so sorry.
But Optimus Solo, Kevin, is facilitating. I believe Movie Revolt Dan is on board as well. Running that Top 100. This will be the first Top 100 I'm not on every episode. So this is the fourth Top 100 that we've done. I will be there for the finishing touches on the Top 100. Basically the finale and the final countdown. So looking forward to seeing who gets on the list and who doesn't. Just gives me incentive to listen to it and I don't have to edit, so even better for me.
Yeah, so I'm not sure when I'm back on the show. I seem to take massively long breaks, so whenever Steve lights the Birdman signal in the sky, I will be there. Obviously, keep it locked to thisweekingeek.net. I got a nerd news going up this weekend. This Altered Geek will get posted on Twig at some point this weekend. Finally going to get around to doing that bots roll. I've actually been talking with Shane from Arc Dream Publishing. He's the publisher behind the new Delta Green, which is the Call of Cthulhu combat variant, or more the modern version of Call of Cthulhu. We're going to talk about that hopefully sometime this week or next. Topic show for November. We haven't quite decided what we're going to do. Maybe we'll do part two of our Star Trek show, because I know in September we just kind of ran out of time, so maybe we'll finish up part two with DS9, Voyager, and Beyond. So I'll work with Ryan on that one. And I think from December 12th till February 1st I'm going to be taking an extended break from Twig. I'm only going to be doing a show once every 2 weeks, so Nerd News will be a news magazine program temporarily. Well, I enjoy a little bit of wintertime break and wintertime blues. So, should be good, though. I'm kind of looking forward to taking some time off this year. And, other than that, TerribleWarriors.com doing a lot of really cool stuff. We got Dungeons & Dragons. We got Ravenloft going on right now. Embers of the Jedi is being recorded right now. So, good times for all. So TerribleWarriors.com and ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So I think that about does it this week. So till next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.